everybody, JJ Cooper, Matt Eddy, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. We are talking all about the reshuffled, reorganized, entirely new regime, Washington Nationals, who has basically a kind of a new approach. And I would say, so good news, bad news. The bad news of that also seems to be somewhat of an understanding that, you know, sorry, Nats fans, we did do a rebuild. There are pieces of that that will be part of this. But we're also, the changeover in front office is kind of the starting point of an acknowledgement that this multi-year rebuild that they've gone through did not take. And now they're going to see, can they do it again?
Yeah.
When you look at it now, the new Paul Tivone regime, how much do you think is going to be keeping pieces of the old rebuild, and how much of it is going to be not starting from scratch, but starting several steps back from, oh, this team's just around the corner to be contender?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's unlikely that CJ Abrams will be on the next Nationals playoff team. James Wood might be. Dylan Cruz, Dalen Lyle might be. But it's
long-term. Pedro Ruiz, maybe not.
But it's long-term because when you take Eli Willett's 1-1, great prospect, and put you past on some college guys to do it, that signifies more of a longer-term approach. When you trade Mackenzie Gore, that underlines that you're taking a longer-term approach.
And that was the point to me that made it very clear that this is not a, oh, we think we're a piece or two away. Obviously, Mackenzie Gore doesn't have that many years till free agency, but at the same time, he still had two. Where if you thought, oh, there's something, 2027 is a really, we could really be there, you might not trade Mackenzie Gore.
Yep. And they did. And they got a package that they value and that we value with two top 10 prospects. So
they obviously traded for Harry Ford as well, which is kind of a, I would say, a signifier that maybe Kbert Ruiz is not the catcher of the long-term future. And I would say on top of that, they also got some news last year, injury-wise, on the pitching front, that kind of maybe pushes the timetable a little bit too. Harlan Susana and Travis Sikora, two of their best pitching prospects, are basically, we hope to see them later in this year at best, you know, and probably not going to see them at full speed and in their primes again till 2027, and probably still need some more developmental time. So that adds to this, like, more of a long-term approach, I feel like.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. But when they're healthy and effective, like, they have two of the better arms in the top 100. They're that good.
And I would say that kind of the guy, don't forget about him, is you're graduated now, but now let's see also what we've seen flashes from Cade Cavalli in the past, and we've also seen many IL stints. Like, okay, what are they going to be able to get from him? I would say that 2026 now becomes, for the new regime, kind of the evaluative year to figure out, who are we building around here? Who has value in trade? Who can we improve? Who can we maybe unlock something new that wasn't there before? And hopefully maybe either becomes a piece of this or becomes valuable in trade. Like, can they get more out of a Brady House? Can they get more out of a James Wood, who has shown flashes? But I would say, I don't think we've seen the best yet that we're going to see. Well, hopefully that we're going to see out of James Wood, even though he's been pretty good at times.
No, that's fair. Right? You mentioned Cavalli and House. Those are two organization first round picks who are important to the future, either for on-field value or trade value. So they need to get a lot out of those guys.
Well, speaking of this, you already mentioned, so the number one prospect in the system is Eli Willits. And now we should note, this was not a Paul Tivone, you know, this was a kind of in-between pick, right? So the Mike Rizzo regime had, you know, Mike Rizzo had been basically already dismissed and Paul Tivone was brought in offseason, but Eli Willits kind of does, I feel like, fit in with what the new regime, when they're saying this longer-term approach, when you take a high school shortstop at the top of the draft. How easy was he as the number one pick in this group?
Yeah.
Number one prospect.
Yeah. Given the alternative options, he was a slam dunk. I think you have a switch-hitting shortstop, a lock to stay at the position, runs well, great bat-to-ball skills. You're just looking for the physical development and the power development. That's really the only thing holding him back from a higher standing. And I think he's a very, very strong prospect.
When you look at him, if you're saying, okay, I'm a Nationals fan, I want to kind of picture him, like, what are the possibilities of him, and what are the concerns?
I think the concern is just that the impact will never, you know, never reach like more than much more than 50 for power. You know,
that partly because of when you look at kind of his dad was a big leaguer, mm-hmm. but looking at his dad's career, is that kind of play? And when you look at his body type, does that kind of fit into
body type? Yeah, he's slender. You know, he has physical maturity in front of him, and how that plays out will determine the power. And but I think the floor is very high because he's a shortstop and because he can
a true shortstop,
like at worst he's batting at the bottom of your order and playing every day,
and at best he's kind of batting at the top of your order.
Yes,
he can run, he can play defense, and to give an example of another team you do with the Mets, like again. When we talk about power development, we always acknowledge, like, if you can hit, there's always a chance that power is going to come. Mm-hmm. When Francisco Lindor, now the Mets shortstop, was coming up through the minors, the question we always heard was, okay, I know he's going to play shortstop. He's really good. I know he's going to hit. How much power is going to develop? And then you turn around, and all of a sudden, in his 20s, as he physically matured, the power came. Like, that's the hope with a guy like Eli Willett.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out, but we just haven't seen it yet.
When you look at this, so we said it was pretty easy in part. If Harlan Susanna had stayed healthy, would it have been maybe a little bit tougher call, or was still probably been an Eli Willett's clear number one?
Maybe a little trickier, but Susanna has a much shorter track record of like being the version we saw during stretches in 25 and having that kind of control and that kind of dominance. And the pitcher injury risk in general, unfortunately. I think Willits would have been the guy no matter what.
So the other thing with this is that Harry Ford comes in and moves straight into three. Luis Perales is acquired, you know, he's four. Like Gavin Fien is five. Like that's like a good news, bad news thing almost to me a little bit. Like the good news is this is an organization that's bringing in talent from the outside, making moves to do that. At the same time, I would also say, for an organization that's been in rebuild mode, you kind of would hope that there would be a little bit more at the top of the top 10 to be like Harry Ford comes in and maybe he slots five, maybe he slots six, not three.
I think that's fair because they're bringing in good prospects, but not elite ones. I think a factor here is simply that, you know, high draft picks like Seaver King and Luke Dickerson didn't really perform last year like they could have or should have performed. So that's a large factor that looms with this entire organization.
That's kind of leads into this next question that we like to ask, which is the system better or worse than it was at this time last year?
I would say it's better because it's deeper.
And they did have the number one pick.
But that's true. The 2025 draft, they had a large bonus pool. I forget if it was the highest or not.
I think the Orioles may have topped them.
Yeah, close. But it was one of the highest bonus pools. They spent it almost exclusively on high school players who have high upside potential. And they graduated a number of quality players like Dylan Cruz, Brady House, Kate Cavalli, Daylon Lyle, all these players, Brad Lord, all graduated. So they had a large graduating class. But despite that, I do think this group has more upside.
I think it's a deeper group, right? Like, that's the thing that does jump out here is you said, like, they drafted high school guys who they don't even slot into the top, you know, that you're talking 10 on in some of these guys,
yeah.
Where obviously there's a little bit of sketch. So I think this is kind of to me, one of the key developments here is going to be, we've written about it before. The Nationals have been, without question, I would say, in the current draft era, 2012 on, they've been the worst hitting development in Major League Baseball. It's not close. It's the best hitters developed homegrown. Again, James Wood, CJ Abrams do not count for this. Those were guys who were drafted elsewhere and then brought in. But if you said, give me the five best homegrown drafted or signed internationally hitters for the Nationals in the, you know, especially in draft. They did have Victor Robles, a couple guys like that. But in the draft, if you look at it, it is guys, it is miss after miss, and it is that's where they're going to have to, the new front office, I feel like, some of the guys who are already there, like you said, it's, can you find another gear for Seaver King, who was a top 10 pick a year and a half ago now? but did not have a season where you're like, yep, we feel good that this is, you know, that this is, you're seeing everything you want to see. There are questions there. You said some of the guys who are graduated, but is Brady House, Dylan Cruz, who has not really, you know, like Dylan Cruz was considered one of the top players in that draft class and have not been particularly impactful so far. There are questions about his impact at the big league level. And then I would say that you could go to this high school class that they just signed. But then, like, also, guys, you know, there are some guys who I would say are, maybe it's a little late, but, like, can this new regime get – Elijah Green still has some of the loudest tools in baseball. He's a great – you know, there's great power there. He can run. There's defense, all that. Mm-hmm. He's never made enough contact for it to matter. And it's getting a little late in his development for that to turn around. But this is a new approach. This is kind of an organization doing things differently. Like, I'm really fascinated to see if some of these players, not all, but if some of them find another gear,
yes,
kind of with this new regime.
Absolutely. I think Christian Vaquero, the Cuban center fielder, I think you could put him in the group as well, of a guy who has potential but hasn't realized hardly any of it. I think he's another project for them.
I think that if you said what has been the problem, if you said try to summarize it with the Nationals, it's been the Nationals, understandably, they like tools. But there's been a lot of guys that they've drafted over the years. And again, we say, like, we could, I'll try to put the link to the story on this. They have by far the least amount of production among drafted hitters since 2012.
And that was very true in 2025. Second lowest OPS among all full season clubs.
And what we've seen consistently troubles with pitch recognition, mm-hmm, troubles with contact rates. It's drafting guys who have power, who have athleticism, who have defensive value potentially, mm-hmm, but then who get derailed because you have to control the strike zone. You have to, when you get a pitch to hit, really do something with it. And there's been consistent issues with that. I know that Brady House is already talking in spring training about, hey, we got a tragic machine now. This is great. And again, that's not congratulations. You're now on the cutting edge. That is congratulations. You are moving into what is considered normal for a major league organization, but they don't have to be bleeding edge here. If they can start doing a better job of making contact, of pitch recognition, of helping guys' swings get to that point that it fits better what they're trying to do, this could really be kind of exponential growth.
There's a tremendous amount of low-hanging fruit in this organization for this new player development regime. Because I was shocked, like, going through these top 30 reports, how strikingly similar so many were. It was player doesn't make enough contact, hits the ball on the ground too much, chases too much. It was like that pretty much fit every one of the top hitting prospects.
And that's you again, if you have one or two of those, it's like, okay, we knew when we brought this guy in that this guy was going to be a longer burn. We're going to have to develop. But if you're doing that over and over, it's the same thing like when we did the Rockies. And it's like when every Rockies report I read, it's like, how many corner, infield, corner, outfield, defensive question, big power, big contact concern guys can one organization have? And it's like, even their guys who are good defensively, it's like, they're probably a corner. They're not like, they don't have any shortstops almost in the organization. They don't have center fielders. They have more like the guys who are at the very end of the defensive spectrum and then still face offensive questions. I would say the Nationals flip that a little bit, which is they have a lot of guys. They've had a lot of guys over the years who are more up the middle guys, but they kind of, a lot of times, again, because of these issues, they stagnate a little bit. Like you mentioned, again, there's a couple of guys I think are kind of fascinating, but you mentioned Seaver King. Mm-hmm. Seaver King, you know, get prominent, you know, first round pick 20, you know, year and a half ago now. Coming out, it was like, okay, this is a guy who had 1 year at Wake Forest, was seen as one of the better, kind of more athletic. But also, thoughts were like it was the hit tool is going to be kind of one of the carrying tools here. Not a lot of impact last year. Like, what does he have to do? Like you said, low-hanging fruit. What is potentially the low-hanging fruit with a guy like Seaver King?
Yeah, I think it's pitch identification, not chasing, you know, identifying pitches to damage, and really just getting the ace swing on the ball and not not making ground as much ground ball contact. And we began to see that manifest a little bit in the AFL, where he was going to this no stride swing and really, really swinging with more intent than he had during the season.
I would say this is going to be the biggest development question, the biggest story with the Nationals is, can they really improve the hitting development? I'm going to kind of switch up our order a little bit, or what we do, because when we say, what is this organization good at developing? I feel like we can't say almost anything on the hitting side. Again, like, there's been guys who they brought in, like James Wood is, you know, a useful.
I think Dalen Lyle.
Dalen Lyle,
because he actually did have very, very yes. intentional improvements last offseason to meet the ball up front and improve that speed. But yeah.
But I do feel like on the pitching side, like, we've seen some success. Some guys come up to the big leagues and have some success. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, if you ask me how this Nationals team kind of does take that step forward over the next couple of years, we know that you have to have numbers and not every one of them is going to work out. But an organization that has a Susana and a Perales and a Clemmy and a Sikora, you know, and again, some of the guys who are already up in the big league levels, there's real upside talent here. Mm-hmm. If it all clicks and stays healthy, that's the two big questions.
Yes.
But is pitching kind of where they've been a little bit stronger at development?
Yeah, I think you can make the case. I think last year when Gore was injured late in the year, I think they had an entirely homegrown rotation. It wasn't a great rotation, but it was all guys they developed. Brad Lord is a good 5-6 spot mm-hmm. starter guy who they completely homegrown.
Yeah, so they got guys like that. Again, we'll see, like with Cavalli, we'll see with some of these. Like, there are the pieces here, I feel like, on the pitching side. I feel like on the hitting side, even if we're being optimistic, it's going to take a lot of these guys who are good ways away developing to kind of, unless they really do find it. Like, again, the most rosiest optimistic way of saying this would be is if CJ Abrams finds another gear in 26 and James Wood finds another gear and Dylan Cruz finds another gear and the Kaber Ruiz Harry Ford combo pack, you know, like these kind of things all, if enough of those click, then all of a sudden this team's in a different spot than Brady House, another one, like, Luis Garcia, there's a number of these guys, but that's where this gets really tricky. I do want to kind of talk a little bit, like, so they brought in Harry Ford and Harry Ford, I feel like, has hovered on the edge of the top 100 for us basically since the last World Baseball Classic, when he also was playing for Great Britain.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are some really good attributes to Harry Ford. And I also think that there are some attributes of him that maybe aren't as true as they used to be. Like, I think that Harry Ford is still athletic for a catcher, but I will note, like, he better catch, because when the Mariners talked about, oh, we're going to work on his versatility, make him an outfielder, they jumped that pretty quickly. And if you look at his speed, he does not run like he did a few years ago. He is not that premium run, for a catcher. He still runs well for a catcher, but he's not like this plus runner or anything like that. I think I do think that his path is much more as, can he get defensively to the point where he's a solid defender at a catcher who gets on base, who does hit? And okay, maybe there's not a ton of impact there. That could be okay if these other aspects come along. But I do feel like he's kind of positioned in a place here that gives him a real opportunity, probably much more so, obviously, than what's been the case in Seattle, where there is this catcher who seems to have that job pretty locked down for a long time to come.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, well, Ford has a great runway here with the Nationals. And I think we see with catchers, those who want to catch and want to put the work in can get to near average at a pretty high rate.
Teams have gotten a lot better at developing.
Like coaching, yeah.
I mean, you know. I was
gonna say. So I think maybe the most succinct way to say it is the ball is in his court.
So I will say right now, a question we also always ask is, who's your guess to be next year's number one? I will say right now, if Eli Willits is not number one for this organization next year, either it's an incredible story because that means someone else has like emerged as like a top 20 prospect in the game, top 25, or it's not a great sign for Eli Willis. That's really kind of the only two things, because he ain't graduated in a year, and he was the number one pick a year ago.
Where did they pick in this draft?
Yeah,
I should have looked that up.
Yeah, they're high, but they're not. They like it is a good draft, but like I do think that Willis obviously should be the, you know, the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely fair.
First full season.
Yeah,
full pro season.
Yeah, and you know, it would take like an outstanding performance from like a Siever King or a Gavin Fien type of guy to even enter the conversation.
I would say, yeah, the better way to ask right now, I guess, would be like, and we'll take the draft out of it for now, beyond him, who has the best case? Because again, we do think like Susanna might still be eligible for this. I can see him still being at number two, but like, is it Gavin Fien potentially who could, like, obviously they really liked him. There were a number of teams who really liked him, you know, coming out of the draft. He's more like, for everything we just described, because he's another high school shortstop from last year's draft class. But if you take everything we described about Eli Willits, it's kind of like the mirror. It's like the opposite of that, right?
Yep.
Gavin Fien is probably not going to be a shortstop in the long term, but there is potentially real offensive impact here, I feel like.
Yeah. Like, as you mentioned, a lot of teams love the hitting attributes, the chance for above average plus hit power. And obviously the Nationals really valued it because they traded Mackenzie Gore to acquire Fien as the headliner.
And Devin Fitzgerald also became like a headliner in that. Like, and there's some good and bad here too. Like, Devin Fitzgerald had a really good, like really impressive, you know, pro ball last year. At the same time, the yeah, but is was a little older, you know, like is a more polished player. I think there's still kind of, there's some scouts who kind of view it and say, I want to see him do it against more advanced competition. I want to see how much projection there is there and all that. He's kind of he'll be a very interesting guy to watch in 26, I feel like, as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit first, infielder, probably not a shortstop, but, you know, it's good to have these players around.
You also mentioned, like, we're going to talk more about these when we get to I'll tease it. We're going to wrap up the video side here, but we're going to talk about some of those high school guys. You said it's not just Eli Willis that they took. On the podcast feed, we will dive into more of those because most of those guys fit in this 11 to 20, 25 range on this top 30. We'll do that right after this quick break. So, Matt, the high school guys after Willits, who are some of the names to know, some of the names who've kind of fit in this, names to know really at 10 on this list?
Yeah, they spent a large portion of their draft bonus pool on Willits, but they saved money with the one overall pick in order to sign some other high school players.
If you'd pick number one, with very few exceptions, we may see it this year with Rock Chalowski, but with very few exceptions, even if you give that guy decent money, you're still going to have a lot of money to spend elsewhere.
And the Nationals spent most of it on some high school talent, including North Carolina high school shortstop Coy James, and then a couple of pitchers, right-handers, Landon Harmon and Miguel Cime Jr. The pitchers are power-oriented right-handers who have a long track in front of them as high school right-handers. And Coy James is more of a natural hit guy. I think a lot of scouts see him as a bat first, second, or third baseman eventually.
So they literally, okay, this is the true dream scenario, I would say, that will probably not turn out. But there is a scenario, if everything breaks right, that they could basically have acquired, Gavin Fien was not their pick, but three high school shortstops in one draft class who could end up slotting as like, here's your second baseman, here's your shortstop, and here's your third baseman, who all come up together. Now,
absolutely true. Yep.
I will say that is like, you know, okay, that would be like, I need this one card to draw, you know, like a royal flush. The chances are it won't develop like that. But if it did, like they went very, it was a very good high school shortstop class, and they went very strong into that high school shortstop.
Yeah. One way or the other, it's going to be a watershed draft for the Nationals organization.
And again, you, with new regime, that this is, it's not their draft, but it is one that could be very impactful, like you said, for them. When you look at these arms, I do feel like these are guys who they have to have a little bit of patience with, like high school power pitchers, you know, high school draftee power pitchers. Don't expect that to be turn around 2 years from now, see them in the big leagues. Don't expect it to be something where there's never some bumps in the road, because even the guys who really develop, Mackenzie Gore being a perfect example, is they often have stretches. Lucas Giolito, who's ended up being a very good one, like they often have stretches where you're like, what is happening here? because they have to go through kind of these, you know, there are pitchers who skip that step. Very few prep pitchers, I feel like, though, do, yeah. Even the good ones.
Yeah. I can't think of a good example.
Hunter Green. Jose
Fernandez, maybe.
Jose Fernandez did. You're right. But like Hunter Green, our example, now if front of the rotation guy, and like Hunter Green has stretches where it's like, wow, that's an ADRA. He's every fastball he throws comes in at 100 and he seems to go out at 110, you know, and then he figured it out.
The specter of injury, unfortunately.
Right. So what are some other guys that jump out to you that you should know, you know, that Nationals fans should know beyond the 10?
I was really impressed, or intrigued, I should say, with Sam Peterson, the outfielder from Iowa. And I know some other organizations carry him pretty high on their evaluations of the Nationals. Just an athletic player who's, you know, finding his swing and playing more center field as a pro. I think he's got more upside if he can stay healthy. He's dealt with myriad injuries, but I like him.
And then I think they had also at least one guy who really did kind of break out in his debut.
Yeah, Marconi Herman, middle infielder in the Dominican Summer League. Modest six-figure signee who hit really well. Looks like he has attributes to stay in the middle infield. You know, he's got a lot to prove, but a very encouraging start.
I can feel like I can promise you this, National fans. We will have a story at some point at the end of this year kind of looking at how is the Nationals different from where they were a year ago. We'll look at that at some point. And I do think it'll be very interesting to see kind of that. This Nationals 2026 season, I hate to say it because I know that, you know, if you're a Nationals fan, it's been a grind here for a while. But I do feel like that this is a year of the question's going to very much be, we're going to see how the turnaround, how the development is going. This could be, again, us talking this time next year, we could be talking about Eli Willits being much closer to the big leagues. We could be talking about Harlan Susanna, Travis Sikora, Alex Clemmy being like, wow, this looks like a really impressive wave of pitching that's just around the corner. We could be talking about this high school shortstop class we talked about. It's like, whoa, these are now three, you know, guys who are at least knocking on the door of the top 100. There's a lot that could happen, but it's also something we know also we can say that a year from now, we'll probably be saying like, there is no clear way of saying whether this rebuild, you know, is going to click or not. It's still too soon.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it was Carlos on our staff who noted a lot of shortstop talent in this group, but there's not a lot of like plus power projection. I think they run the risk there. I think that was why someone like Ethan Petrie was attracted to them in this 25 draft, an established SEC power hitter. I think Yohandy Morales a few drafts ago for that reason, but they don't have anybody who's like, wow, this guy's going to come up and bang.
But I will say this, considering their draft track record of previous years with the guys who had real power, I think zagging where they had zigged before made some sense too. It's like, hey, as you just laid out, there were so many of these guys who've been in the system who the hit tool is the real question. It's like, you know what? Let's get some guys who the hit tool is not the question. I will say, to give an example of an organization, if you want me to give an example of an organization where this has worked, right? The Tigers, for the longest time, really struggled to the Tigers drafted position player-wise, I would say for the 20 teams, they basically drafted power arm pitchers, often SEC pitchers with the relief risk.
Yep.
And then they drafted toolsy position players who had real defensive value, had athleticism, often had power, but it was like, we're going to figure out how to make them hit. That didn't work very well for them. And then you could look at when kind of flip into the 2020s, they started switching for let's draft hitters who are going to figure out athletically where they play, the Colt Keefs of the world, the Jace Youngs of the world. And then, you know, and then they ended up kind of like those guys could hit. And then they got to the Kevin McGonagalls of the world. And so then you got to the point where, you know, it's really kind of turned them around in some ways. Obviously, it's not just that. But that's where I do think like that zag may be very useful for them. Even though, again, that was not this regime. That was kind of the interim regime in between. But that approaching is saying, hey, let's get hitters and see if we can develop power. We can say that the Nationals had real struggles taking guys who had power and developing their ability to hit. Maybe this other approach works a little bit better. We know that you can improve. We've seen examples. Altuve came from the Red Sox. We've seen examples of them of kind of consciously working on bat speed and improving power, developing it. But it'd be interesting to see.
And I think that's the most encouraging thing for Nationals fans. The value the Red Sox got out of the draft, especially after the first round, was pretty much unparalleled over the last few years.
So that is our Nationals Prospect Podcast deep dive, and we hope you enjoyed this. This means 29 teams down, one to go. We will be rolling out the Angels, and we will then have wrapped up 30 deep dives. Said we wanted to get it done kind of early in spring training. Okay, this is a little later in spring training than ideal, but we got it there. We're still far, far away from the start of the regular season. So format, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.